Tears make lines in the mud as he looks up at me, voice cracking like a child's. Always, Daryl. Always. Chapter 41 Achilles. There's no time to mourn. My force decimated, we must divide still further. My army outside the city hurls itself at impregnable walls, expecting help from the inside. They've received none. My legates will be hailing my signal, wondering if I've died. Such a rumor could lose the battle. I send Ragnar with the remnants of the obsidians to open one of the wall's gates for my legates, who wait for us with thousands of greys and obsidians in reserve. I give you no gold, I tell Ragnar. Do you understand what that means?
I do.
This can be a beginning, I say quietly. I bend, picking a discarded razor from the sucking mud. It is a man's duty to choose his own destiny. Choose yours. I extend the razor to him. Ragnar looks back to the obsidians. Their armor is battered from extricating them from the suits. And they're caked in mud. Smaller than he, some lithe and quiet, others huge and shifting foot to foot with eagerness, all with those black eyes and white hair. They arm themselves with weapons taken from the greys and obsidian I killed. Hardly enough to go around, and they'll be little use if they run into golds. Ragnar chooses. He extends a hand. Howlers prepare themselves behind me, Thistle still eyeing him evilly.
I choose to follow you, he says, and I choose to lead them.
I place the razor in his hand.
Daryl!
Thistle gasps.
What are you doing?
Shut up, Severo snaps.
He can't do that.
Thistle stumps forward and tries to rip the razor out of Ragnar's hand. He doesn't let go.
Give it up, slave! Give me the blade!
She pulls her own razor out.
Give me the blade or I'll cut away the hand that holds it.
Then I will cut you down, Thistle. Severo sneers.
Severo?
Thistle turns back to him, eyes wide. She looks at me, at the other howlers who stand quiet, unsure of what just happened.
Have you gone mad? It's not his right. It's ours. He doesn't deserve it,
Severo asks.
Who are you to decide that? I'm a gold, she shrieks. Clown? Pebble?
Pebble remains silent. Clown tilts his head. Darrow, what is this?
It's my army, I say.
You remember the Institute? You remember how I bleed for those who follow me? How I do not take the allegiance of slaves? Why now are you surprised by this? Because it is real?
It's a slippery slope, is all.
Clown looks at the war around us. Even here.
You're right. It is.
I bend and find another razor cast in the mud. I toss this one to another of the obsidians, a nasty-looking woman half my size. She holds it like it's a snake, glancing up at me in fear. They are raised believing we are gods. To be given Thor's hammer, how would I hold it? Severo walks through the corpses and finds several more. He tosses these to the obsidians.
Don't cut yourselves, he says.
I'm counting on you. Go, I tell them.
They disappear, sprinting into the swelling darkness toward the back side of the colossal wall. I turn to the howlers.
Is there a problem?
They all shake their heads quickly, except Thistle.
Thistle? Severo asks.
Clown nudges her, and grudgingly she shakes her head.
No problem.
There is. She will not follow me after this. Already I feel my friends turning from me, and they know not even a fraction of the truth.
That is a problem for another day.
We must move fast, but we only have one pair of functional grav boots among us. I give those to Severo. We try to see if he can lift us like I lifted the howlers on Olympus, but as we load onto the boots, they sputter and spark. Only able to carry his weight. Damaged, somehow, in the fighting and the rescue.
Bloody damn.
So it'll be on foot. And we cannot be slowed. I point to the recoil plate of those lucky enough to have it after the starshell amputations. Armor off!
What?
Thistle sputters. Armor off! Except scarab skin.
Unarmored against Praetorians?
Thistle howls.
Do you want us all to die?
We need to move fast. If the shield goes down before we get to the Citadel, the Sovereign will slip away. If we do not capture her, she will have a chance to regroup. She will join her Ash Lord. She will summon all of the Society, and they will come here with 10 times our number to crush us. We'll win the battle, lose the war.
But if we take her,
Severo growls, coming to my side. We're talking about the Sovereign, Glan says. She'll have Praetorian Olympic Knights.
And?
Severo asks.
We have us.
6 of us. Glan shrugs sheepishly when we stare at him.
I just thought someone should point it out.
We have 15 kilometers to cover on foot, I say. They nod.
My pace.
Then they exchange worried looks and start taking off their armor.
If you fall behind, find a place to hide.
1/3 earth grav. Bodies in prime shape. This will still be hard, especially with my arm savaged by my own razor. Severo saddles up to me as the howlers strip away their armor. I can hear their terror in the clinking of weapons and armor, moved by shaking hands, see it in the frenzied way they rub mud on their faces to blacken their aspects.
They've been with you from the beginning, Darrow.
Severo looks around the stormy park, at the distant citadel and blaze of passing ships.
We're already half the number that took you from Luna. You might have replaced Pax with Ragnar, but you can't replace them.
Or me. I thought you were with me.
I'm your conscience. I follow your ass everywhere, so don't be a shithead.
Registers.
On me, I shout.
Armor shed, we set off silently. Only our razors and scarab skin with us. Wearing rubber-soled undershoes instead of grav boots. We go along the river, leaving the wall behind, sprinting through acres of grassy parks and woods that separate the wall from the city as mechanized war rages in the distance. Ships roar past, making the tree branches shudder and leaves fall. Ground trams flicker far to our right, shuttling soldiers to the front. Explosions plume in the distance. Clouds consume the sky beyond the great shield that overlaps the city. Explosions flash inside the clouds. Mustang will be nearing the shield generators now, if she's alive. It is a ragged pace, covering 15 kilometers at a sprint. My side stabs with pain, muscles hunger for oxygen, and my right arm aches from the bloody bullet wound in my bicep and the lacerations that bleed along my forearm and wrist. I took half a pack of stims so I can use the arm. The pain doesn't blind. It focuses, keeps me from thinking of the dead. When we reach the edge of the woods, we do not stop to rest, but sprint onto the commercial district's paved streets, cutting through buildings that tower over a kilometer up into the sky. We run through deserted low districts, the bazaar where winding corridors lead us through rough streets and graffiti-stained walls, The occasional brown or pink or red will scuttle out of our way, or peer at us through windows, from alleys. Even here, in the center of their reign, I see the graffiti of Io's death. Her hair is ablaze like the wounded fighters that streak across the sky beyond Aegea's transparent shields. Someone pukes behind me. They don't stop. The reek of bile travels with us. Severo flies back to us and lands beside me. Platoon of greys ahead. Go south one block, then cut back to avoid. Then he's gone again. We follow his instructions. Suddenly there's movement in the sky, and we slow to a jog to watch. Pebble takes the opportunity to collapse onto the pavement, chest heaving. High above, but still beneath the shield, a horde of shuttles ferry soldiers from the smaller engagement on the southern wall, where Lorne fights, toward the northern wall, where Ragnar and his obsidians have gone. Dozens of shuttles full of reserves depart their dock in the hangars and ports that lace the 7-kilometer-high rock wall of the Valles Marineris to the east and west. Most of the barracks are there, as are the factories where high reds slave away making armaments and commercial consumer goods. We hide from the craft. Something has happened at the north wall. We take off again. Pebble moans. Thistle gets her up, keeps her in gear. Severo rejoins us minutes later, left arm hanging limp at his side. I eye it. He ignores my concern. Ragnar, open the gory damn gates! His face splits into a smile. 12 of them in the wall's face. Our boys are pouring in, and... He stands there grinning. And what? And Ragnar killed the Wind's Knight and almost cut down Cassius. An Olympic? Clown gasps. Cut him down in front of the entire army. The obsidians in the army are going absolutely manic! Then Severo is off, and we push on. A squad of grey policemen waylay us. We take cover as their gunfire pocks the sidewalks, and then divert to an alleyway to avoid them. 4 kilometers until we reach our destination. Coughing and gasping, we stumble into the exterior of the citadel's grounds. We hide in the trees there like some ragged pack of castaway demons. Through the thin copse of woods and past a high wall, the citadel stands, a network of spires, not golden, but white, laced with red and still decorated with the lion statues of Augustus, though Bellona blue and silver banners flap in the breeze over top a lion weather vane. Their silver eagle seems so proud, till Severo waves down to us from the weather vane and cuts one of the banners free. They didn't expect anyone to penetrate this far. Aside from its beauty, the citadel is also a fortress, one I don't want to tangle with. We'd go room to room, and, assuming it's not completely empty of soldiers, be overwhelmed, pinned to its expensive red oak walls, and killed on its marble floors. It's not shielded, but a network of bunkers lie far beneath it. I was worried that is where the sovereign would be kept. If she stayed there, this would turn into a siege. It would be days before we dig her out, if we could at all. So I give her a path of escape. It all falls on Mustang's shoulders. The shield must go down at the proper time. Flush her out. A decorative war, one that had usually been nothing more than a hop-skip in grav boots, bars us from the silent citadel grounds. All around us is park. Trees, fountains, white squares where golds and silvers would have afternoon tea, now empty. So silent here, at the eye of the storm. Severo flies down to join me. "Can you lift us over the wall?" I ask. "Things are almost out of juice," he grumbles. "Let's try." We hug one another, and he lifts me into the air, wincing and favoring his left arm. The boots sputter and shiver out sparks. Twice we dip down. Then we're atop the wall. I sat down, and Severo dips down again to pick up the next howler. Moments later, his head appears at the top of the wall for a moment, then vanishes as his grav boots spark and whine. With one last mechanical pop, the boots give out, and Severo and the howler fall the 10 meters to the ground. A great boom thunders from across the city. Smoke rises distantly.
Mustang did it!
Above, the translucent shield that separated this world from the world of ships fails. It wobbles and, distorting the fires in the city and the lightning above like a corrupted mirror, shatters into prismatic mist. Or, 1/8 of it shatters. A flood of pent-up water falls down on that section of the city in great grey sheets.
It didn't work!
Pebble cries from the other side of the wall. But it did. One by one, the nexuses that cast the shield overload.
It's a chain reaction, as great sheets of water from the storm finally fall on Aegea.
Roke, if he's winning, will launch the reinforcements. The city is as good as taken. And even now, the Sovereign will be extracted from the bunkers by her bodyguards to make an escape from the lost planet. But the shuttle pads are still 2 kilometers on the other side of the Citadel grounds. This was all supposed to be different. I should be in my armor, 100 obsidians behind me, 12 of my best goals. Instead, I lead a pack of my friends into a meat grinder. I need to change the paradigm, but I won't risk them. I glance down the wall at Severo, who immediately recognizes the look in my eyes.
No, Darrow, he says. Think of your mission!
He's begging me, jumping and clawing at the wall as I turn away.
Don't do it, Darrow! Wait! They'll kill you!
I drop over the other side of the wall into the Citadel's gardens.
Some men have threads of life so strong that they fray and snap those around them. Enough friends have paid for my war. This one's on me.
Darrow!
He screams. Horrible. Desperate.
Stop!
I run faster than I have in all my life. The Sovereign will not escape me. I did all this to catch her. Take her. Break the society. Take her, and the stage is set. We will rise. We can win. I jump rows of shrubbery, sprint around fountains, tear through rose bushes. Blood leaks down my arm. I do not feel my body. I fly over the earth, sling blade in hand. There. I round a corner of the Citadel. Past a garden of roses lies a courtyard of white, scored black by the engines of personal yachts. 4 lonely ships sit in a landing zone that can hold 100. All the shuttles are black with a giant gold crescent on their broad chassis, but the thickest of them, one with larger engines and a reinforced hull, is the Sovereign's. The others are decoys, nearly as thick, nearly as armored. In the air, they are indistinguishable. I've been seen on sensors, no doubt. Grey lurchers are coming for me. Obsidian bodyguards have been loosed from some hidden barracks to kill me. They'll only catch me if I stop. And even as I examine the landing pad, I do not break my stride. Oranges bustle around the black shuttles, prepping them to launch. I'm not too late, but the door from the Citadel is far closer than I to the ship. They come out, in a rush. I don't see her, just purple capes swirling in the rain and wind. They duck their heads into the gale, look upward at the sky where iron rain entry trails glow behind the storm, making the dark clouds look like steel heating slowly in the forge. My titans come. The Praetorians hurry, running up a long ramp into the shuttle's belly with the Sovereign. I catch her face as she ducks into the ship's belly. I see Aja among her entourage, and Karnas. And Fitchner, that ugly, traitorous son of a bitch. I run faster, legs numb with exhaustion, lungs aching. All I am, I put into this moment. My life in the mines, the hours suffering with Harmony, the horrors at the Institute, all the love I've earned and lost and still wish to live for, I let burn in me. Half the entourage waits on the pavement, left behind to watch the ship as its lights glow and its engines prime. The decoys mimic its motions. Abalona Gold turns as I near. His eyes flash wide, and I slash him at the run as he lets out a half-scream. More turn. Women, men, warriors, politicos, golds and silvers I recognize from my days at Augustus's side. Their realization of my presence comes in waves. The enemy is supposed to be at the gates, not among them. So they flinch in seeing me. And when they gather their wits, I'm already past their armored hands. I dodge a Grey's outstretched grip, snag a small munitions pouch from his waist. I lash backward, hitting flesh. Shouts, fumbling for razors, bullets, pulse blasts snap past my head. The shuttle's ramp retracts as it begins to rise. I scream and jump with all the might I've ever had. The hand of my injured right arm grips the ramp's edge. My eyes bug from my head with the strain and pain in my fingers. The ship continues to rise. The roar of the engines fills me, rattling my heart against my ribs. The ramp continues to close. I grunt desperately and jerk myself upward, awkward at the odd angle, but possible in the low gravity. I roll forward into the bay and onto my knees and pant, sling blade against the floor. The sound of the engines slips away as the door shuts and pressurizes. All I hear is my ragged breath and the rumble of the deadly shuttle as it makes its escape. I look up.
Chapter 42. Death of a Gold. 6 Praetorians in full armor watch me. Carnus is with them, and Aja, and stocky Fichtner, his eyes widening as he sees me. The Sovereign stands in front of her Praetorians, tall, but hardly coming to their shoulders. Bloody damn. I didn't think they'd all still be in the bay.
Darrow?
Fichtner almost moans.
What?
Carnus laughs, looking about to see if the others notice how ridiculous a present just fell in their laps.
What? Andromedus. Where did you come from? It looks like Jove himself just shit you out.
I stay on my knees, panting, dripping blood and rain and sweat and mud.
We can leverage him as a hostage,
Fichtner says quickly as the ship rises in the sky.
No, the Sovereign answers. Achilles would never have been ransomed, for by being captured he loses what makes him Achilles.
She regards me for a cool moment. I spit phlegm on the ground.
Aja, cut off his head.
Aja paces toward me.
Stupid boy. No friends, no army, no hope.
I chuckle darkly.
Who needs hope when you have a pulse grenade?
I hold up the munitions I ripped off the Grey's belt. They recoil.
What do you want, Andromedus?
The Sovereign asks slowly.
To prove you are not invincible, land this ship.
Octavia smiles and speaks into a comm.
Pilot? Roll.
The pilot does a barrel roll. Without grav boots, I lose my feet, slamming into the ceiling, then back to the deck, dropping the grenade. My enemies stay rooted in place. Aja kicks the pulse grenade out the open hatch. It explodes far beneath.
I look out into the night, where my plan just disappeared.
Pride, Octavia smiles. I suppose it makes fools of us all.
I take my time, looking back to her, realizing how very stupid I was to think I could control all the variables. And now I've slipped up.
You won't escape, I say.
You know I will. Why else would you risk jumping on my shuttle?
She nods to one of the Olympic knights, and a strange, high-pitched warble ripples through the air twice before subsiding. A ghost cloak. Impossibly expensive for a whole ship. My friends won't be coming to rescue me.
Octavia turns to Fitchner. Rage Knight, have you a nanocam?
He nods and produces a ring.
Record Ajar killing the Reaper.
Fitchner blanches.
Let me kill him.
Carnus begs.
My sovereign, let me kill him for my family. It's my right.
You're right, she asks, surprised. Your family has lost me Mars. You have no rights.
He'd be a better prisoner. Fitchner steps toward the sovereign. Let me talk to him. He's my student. You would have had him serve you once, Octavia. Let him recant and do so again. It will show the greatness of your power, that you can forgive even a little piss-eater like this.
The sovereign turns slowly to look at Fitchner, examining him, and he realizes he's made a mistake. Aja, hold. She smiles. I want Fitchner to kill him. The ugly man just gapes. It's one of the first times I've seen him speechless.
Kill your student, the sovereign says. Or are you not loyal?
Of course I'm loyal. I've already proven it.
Then prove it again. Bring me his head.
There has to be another way.
He set your son against you, Octavia says. And you know I do not keep things near to me that I cannot trust. So, kill him.
Yes, my liege.
Fitzner's face pinches in concentration. There's a strange swirling of sadness in his bronze eyes. Is it so horrible seeing his prize student die? Or is it that I'm Severo's friend? Or is it worry for Severo?
Severo lives, I tell him. He survived the rain.
He nods his thanks and touches his razor. Then he stumbles sideways, shoved aside by Carnus. The huge Bellona charges me, mouth curved in hate, huge shoulders shelled in armor that shows the greatness of his family. He bellows my name. He feints high, curves the razor diagonally at me quick as a snake. I sideslip forward, inside most of the swing, and put my razor through his stomach. I let go the blade and circle around behind him as he collapses to his knees.
Rise so high, in mud you lie.
I whisper as I pull my blade out of his back by its sharp end and cut off his head. A Praetorian runs at me. I throw my razor at him. It takes him in the chest and he falls to the ground. I take my blade from his chest and stumble back from the watching Praetorians.
Idiots,
the sovereign mutters.
Should I keep recording this?
Fitchner scratches his head. The ship shudders again and banks hard before straightening out. My vision wavers, and I stumble to my knee. Hand on the deck. Steady myself. I feel the new warmth spilling down my back and stomach. I'll not kneel. Not to her. Not to a tyrant. I stand unsteadily. Karnas missed most of me, but not all. Blood sluices from between my neck and left shoulder where his razor found purchase. It cut through my collarbone. My body sags.
What a thing.
Octavia Al-Loon's cold eyes survey the wound on my neck.
Imagine this boy shaped in my house, Aja.
She shakes her head and stares at me with a complete lack of understanding. She notes my other wounds, my blood, my exhaustion, my youth. Yet I did all this. Two bodies at my feet. A city stormed behind me. More taken all over Mars. My fleet shattering the Bolognas. The society ready to fracture. She doesn't understand, and she never will. But Fitchner seems to. Eyes glassy, hands clenched. You could not shape me, I mumble. Only Reds could. Only family, only love gave me this strength. But the strength fades now. It's then that Aja rushes forward. We exchange three moves before she knocks my blade aside and punches me so hard in the chest with her fist that I think I'm dead. She slams me against the ceiling like a rag doll, and when she's done, she rejoins the Sovereign, and I moan and sink into the pain.
Bring me his head, Fitchner, the Sovereign commands.
Fitchner looks at me helplessly and puts a hand out, nearly touching her.
We should film his execution for the HC. Propaganda. Full hanging. A state death.
Fitchner. The Sovereign's eyebrows go up till Fitchner retracts his hand.
Enough.
Her jaw muscles work as she thinks.
I want him gone. No more variables. Now. Save the head for a pike. We'll film that.
Fitchner's beady eyes swell with sadness. Born the lowest of the Gulls, he rose to the top on merit alone. What a man. To think I ever thought him weak. Here, at the end of things, I know we will win Mars. Augustus will be freed. The war will continue. Gold will weaken. And Red will rebel. Maybe, just maybe, they will rise and find freedom. I've done what Ares asked. I created chaos. The rest will go to other men, women. Ea would be pleased. I smile softly and feel the weakness in my legs. I am tired. I'm on my knees. When did I get there again? I care not. How very nice it will be to rest in the Vale while others carry out Io's dream. I just wish I'd seen Mustang before the end. Told her what I am. So, at last, she'd understand.
Your boy burned bright. Burned fast.
Aja says to Fitchner from the shadows of my vision.
Keep the head. But you can cast the body to the soil in the Martian way.
Aja reopens the drop ramp. Metal groans. I feel the wind of the Vale on my face. Feel the chill of mist. The scent of rain. I'm going to sleep. Soon I'll wake beside Io. I'll wake in our warm bed, my hands tangled in her hair. I'll wake to love and know that in the world before, I did my best.
I'll miss you, though, Mustang. More than I've admitted until now. Fog and shadow are my vision. For a moment, the smell of rust makes me think I'm in the mine. Am I asleep? I hear metal boots. A man walking through the fog. I can't see his face, but something stirs in me. Father? No, not father. I squint. Uncle Nerol. No, it's Fichtner, boyo. His voice jerks me violently back into the hold of the ship, like a fishhook tearing silk a direction it doesn't wish to go. Oh, I'm glad it's you, I say quietly, finding enough strength to lift my heavy head a bit more to look him in his eyes. Tears fill them. He coughs out a laugh. The wind whistles behind me. Not the veil. Just Mars. Not mist. Just the clouds. The ramps down so they can push my body out. I told Arcos I was never meant to have grey hair. My head dips. I spit out some blood in my mouth. I'm nauseous and fading. Tell Mustang, Eo, I love them. I yawn so deeply. You bloody damn fool, he says in a low whisper, shaking his head. I had it under control. I didn't. I blink through the fog. What? It is me. He says. It's always been me, boyo. The fog disappears. I look up at him. I look up at Ares as he dons his Rage Knight helmet and shoots his pulse fist back at the Praetorians, sending them scattering. He tosses back a sonic grenade. Fichtner! The Sovereign roars. Traitor! An explosion. Something hits my chest and I'm falling, tumbling, flying. Sense cold, ragged wind biting me, stomach in my throat, spinning. Then a rigid arm under mine, rising. Wind whips past my ears, but there's another sound before the darkness swallows me. Fichtner, Ares, terrorist lord of the underworld, howls like a wolf as he carries me to safe harbor. Chapter 43 The Sea. I wake to the smells of the sea. Brine, seaweed, carried on a brisk autumn wind. Gulls cry. One banks and perches on the white stone sill of the open window. It cocks its head at me and flies away into the morning sunshine. Clouds move distantly across the horizon, promising rain, even as early morning dew drips down the open skylight. She stirs at my side, a slender body atop the sheets, coiled around my own damaged form. She's clothed, I'm shirtless. Fresh skin grafts mark my body. Glossy things, pink and tender to the touch. Mustang stirs once more, her movement bringing me into my own body, making me feel the aches and the pains, and the comfort of her closeness. I let my eyelids drift shut, and I sigh deeply, allowing myself to sink into the soft pleasures of being human. Her breath against my neck, the drumbeat of another heart against my ribcage. Her golden hair tickles my nose as cool wind blows strands into my face. The morning air is young,
vital. I breathe it deep, slipping back into sleep. Memories of metal shatter the peace. Screams echo in the black. Friends die. My eyes burst open for the light, desperate to remind me where I am, telling me I'm safe, I'm warm. There's no metal here, only cotton sheets, a bed, a warm girl. Yet the memories are so close. How did I survive? I fell from the sky with Fitchner. Ares, a truth that's always been but seems so new I cannot even grasp it. I woke to a yellow's tools inside my chest, restarting my heart. Then I woke again to a carver's scalpel against my skin. Agony and nausea, my bedmates. Tides of vision ebbing in, flowing out. Visitors coming and going. I prefer waking to this. I'm afraid to close my eyes again. Afraid of what I'll see. What I'll wake to find. As a red child, I shared my small cot with Kieran. Every morning, I'd wake before him and lie there quietly, letting my parents' hushed voices seep under the flimsy door as they started their day. I'd hear father's shuffling feet, the throat-clearing sound he'd make every morning as he washed sleep from his face. Mother would make him coffee, grinding the cubes she'd trade to the greys for pit viper eggs or spools of silk stolen from the webbery. I wish it was the sound that woke me at the same time every morning. The grinding, the smell. I wish I could say it was how my body knew to return from sleep. But it wasn't the smell of coffee or mother's tea. It wasn't the morning sigh of water running through pipes, or the arthritic creak of rope ladders as the men and women from Lycos Township's night shift made their way home from the mines and webbery. It wasn't the weary murmur of those of the day shift making their way to work from home. What woke me was the dread of a closing door. Each morning, it would end the same. First, the clay dishes would clink into the metal sink. Then father's plastic chair would scrape the stone floor. They would stand together at the door, whispering. A silence. I always imagined it was the moment they shared a long kiss. Then, at last, it'd be the goodbye. The front door opened, creaking on rusted hinges. And finally, despite all my prayers, it'd close. I lean close to Mustang and kiss her forehead, harder than I meant to. She wakes delicately like a cat stretching itself out of a summer nap. Her eyes don't open, but she nuzzles into my side. "You're awake," she murmurs. Her lashes flutter, and she bolts upright away from me. "Sorry, must have fallen asleep." She looks to the chair she'd been sitting in. On the bed. "It's fine. Stay. Please." I'd forgotten we're supposed to be cold to each other. "How long has it been?" "Since the assault." "A week." She brushes loose strands of hair from her eyes. "I'm glad you've come back to us."
"Who did we lose?" I ask carefully.
"Lose?" Her hands fidget awkwardly as she lists the casualties. A moment of silence stretches long, the numbers crushing me in my bed. I remember to breathe.
"The Sovereign,
escaped, but not without a nasty wound, courtesy of Fitchner.
Your father? I ask.
You don't know?
She smiles awkwardly and sighs a bit too casually, trying to loosen her own tension. She scoots closer on the bed, still taking care not to touch me.
It's going to be tedious catching you up.
I'm sure you'll manage.
Father is alive. When the shields fell, several Goals already inside the Citadel led a lurcher squad to rescue him. Turns out my brother has a long reach, so when the Olympic Knights came to take him with Octavia, they left empty-handed. The HC channels are calling Roke Nelson reincarnate. He captured more than 80% of the Bologna fleet.
Her tone darkens.
Which means, as leader of the engagement, he has claim to at least 30% of the ships, the rest going to the House Augustus.
Meaning he has more than I do, technically.
The pundits are wondering how long his loyalty will last, now that
the Jackal is playing his games. I interrupt with a laugh.
He never stops.
I don't think Roke will take up arms against me, I say. Do you? She shrugs.
Power creates opportunities. I told you to mend things with him.
Roke is our ally. He always will be. You know him.
He's been here as much as Severo. She smiles slowly. Fell asleep here last night. I shooed him away earlier, but I wouldn't be doing my job if I pretended he wasn't a potential threat to us.
Us, I note.
Your job, I ask, which is, I've appointed myself your chief politico.
Have you now?
I have. The game of court can be a nasty, duplicitous business. You're much too earnest for it. Like a lamb thinking it an honour to be invited to a banquet thrown in its honour by wolves.
And what if it's you I need to be protected from?
Well, she arches her left eyebrow, then I suppose you've already lost.
I laugh
and ask about Severo.
She pretends to look around.
He's not asleep at the foot of the bed. I think he's off with his father. I only returned from visiting Kavax in orbit last night, but Theodora says Severo departed shortly after dinner with Fitchner. Thought he hated the man.
He does.
What's changed?
I shrug and wonder how long Severo has known about his father's true identity. Seems impossible he was as blind as I.
Was someone lying to me for a change?
And Lorne? I ask.
He's with that harpy, Victra.
What's wrong with Victra?
Aside from the fact that she flirts with everything that moves, nothing.
Wait. She flirts with you? Tell me more about that.
Shut it.
Mustang swats at me, but her smile falls just as quick, and she pulls her hand back.
Lorne's taken Victor under his wing. Seems he's comfortable allying his family with the Julii. Victor's mother has agreed to the pact. Three of the most powerful houses on Mars united under my family. A triumvirate against the Sovereign. The governors of the gas giants are on their way to Aegea for a summit. So too are the reformers.
You were right. We take Mars, we have a chance against Octavia.
It isn't just a battle any longer. It's a civil war. And not a pointless one, it seems. Father is making talk of giving the reformers a chance at the table. That this means something.
I remember my conversation with the man. And you believe him?
I do, Taro. She smiles hopefully. For the first time in a long time, I really do.
I am not so sure. What about
Cassius?
She guesses quietly.
His father was killed by the Telemannuses, and he fought Ragnar on the Wall. All his brothers and sisters are reported dead, but he and his mother are missing. I note her quiet. Are you worried he's dead? He is our enemy, she says flatly. His welfare isn't my concern. She examines my eyes closely. Are you worried?
I don't know. I consider.
Gory hell, you're so tender sometimes. Do you regret cutting off his arm, too?
I regret killing Julian.
We're all stained by the past.
Mustang considers.
You forget I had to kill someone in the passage, too. Every peerless guard you've ever met, Lorn, Severo, Pebble, Tactus, Octavia, Daxo, we all started there. Often I think there's too much to regret.
Is she talking about us? Am I a regret? I want to hate Cassius, I say slowly. I really do. Even thinking of him makes me want to crush something, break a window, or preferably his ugly, smug face.
Ugly? She asks skeptically.
So pretty he's ugly. Mustang laughs at that.
But it's hard to keep the hate going, isn't it? She asks.
I nod. Hate is what made Cassius's family throw themselves against Augustus's. Look what that brought them. I pity him, wherever he is.
Earlier I told you not to trust my brother, Mustang says, redirecting the conversation. I meant it. I know you continued your alliance with him. His companies are making you seem like a god. But it has to end. You owe him nothing. Be cordial. Be polite. Don't disrespect him in public. But no more meetings. No more promises. Cut him off. You don't need him anymore. You have me.
This girl. Would that I could introduce her to Mother, to Kieran, and Liana. They'd like her fire. My throat tightens slowly. Io would like her too. I don't have you, I say.
Darrow.
Something strange twists inside me. Like a tight spring of emotion, finally allowed to uncoil. When I was on the bottom of the river, I knew I wouldn't see you again. She hesitates, wanting to reach for me, but resisting because of all we've said before.
You know you don't have my leave to die,
she jokes instead.
Anyway, Severo and the Howlers would never forgive you if you tried. None of them would. You've so many friends, Darrow. So many who'd run through fire for you.
So many who have been burned. Shuddering, I take a long breath and close my eyes, trying not to let the guilt swallow me. The tears come quietly, trickling out of the corners of my eyes.
Darrow, don't cry.
Mustang whispers, reaching for me now.
She scoots closer, holding me. It's all right. It's all over. We're safe.
The sobs come, racking my chest. She's wrong. It's not over. All I see behind my eyelids is a world of war. There is no future for me, for us. Yet how many times have I already been pieced back together? How much longer can all these stitches hold? In the end,
Will there even be pieces left of me? I can't stop crying. Can't even catch my breath. Heart thundering, hands shaking. It all comes out of me. Mustang, barely half my weight, holds me with her gentle arms till I'm exhausted and can do nothing but sink back into the bed. In time, my heart slows, finding rhythm to match hers. We sit that way for what must be an hour. Eventually, she kisses my shoulder, my neck, lips pausing along the jugular as it pulses. I adjust my hands to move her away, but she pushes them to the side and cups my face with a hand. Let me in. I let my hands fall to the bed. Her mouth crafts a warm path to mine. There we share the taste of my tears as her top lip slides between my own and her tongue warms the inside of my mouth. Her hand slides up my neck, nails grazing the skin, till she finds purchase in my hair, tugging slightly at the tangle. Shivers lance my body. Gone is any semblance of resistance. All the guilt that kept me from betraying Io with Mustang is swept away in the chaos inside me. All the guilt I have for knowing she is a gold and I am a red vanishes. I'm a man, and she's the woman I want. My hands find Mustang, pulling her body onto mine, shadowing the length of her legs to the swell of her waist. Long suppressed hunger wakes in me, filling me with heat, aching for her, all of her. Forget my restraint, forget my sadness. This is all I need. I won't run. Not this time. Not when I know how close I came to never seeing her again. I peel apart her clothing with slow force. Under my hands, the fabric is like wet paper. Her skin is smooth, hot marble warmed in the sun. Muscles coil and tense underneath as she arches her back. Hers is a body made for movement, mocking, coiling around mine. I trace my fingers along the curve of her lower back. She pushes into me, pulsing with breath, hips grinding me into the bed. It may have been a week to her, but for me it was minutes, seconds ago, that I kneeled against cold steel warmed by my own blood, waiting for men to cut off my head. This is a moment I thought I would never have again, as I dug Io's grave with my own trembling hands. A moment with a woman I want and love. And what is the bloody damn point of surviving in this cold world, if I run from the only warmth it has to offer? Chapter 44. The Poet. I walk slowly down the stone hall with Mustang. At the windows, guards patrol the estate. They're here to keep us as much as protect us. Rain falls lightly. Laughter drifts out an open door with the smells of coffee and bacon. "What do you mean, I can't be funny?" Roke asks, offended.
"Just that," Daxo says smoothly. "I'm sure you can try, but you're too... scholastic."
"Fine, then. Who was the first carpenter?"
"Is this a joke?"
Daxo asks. "It's intended to be."
"Jesus of Nazareth?"
Daxo guesses.
"It is a history joke, yes?"
"Noah?" Pebble tries.
Mustang and I pause outside the door, smiling to each other.
Jesus of Nazareth? Rogue laughs. You can do better than that.
If I knew I'd be mocked,